Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio by Shaka Hislop. Only one place to start today, and that is Anfield. Liverpool taking on Manchester City. A game, of course, which saw no goals in the first half. Mane with the best opportunity for Liverpool, heading over the bar. Gundogan then missing a penalty late on before the break. But then just an explosion of incidents in the second half that would see Manchester City win by 4-1. And taking a look at how that affects the standing, City then 5 points clear of United at the top of the table. Overall now, 10 clear of Liverpool with a game in hand as well. Well, let's welcome Stevie Nicol and Frank Leboeuf into the conversation. I've got to start with you, Stevie.
How long have we got?
We got a while. You're okay.
I actually thought after Liverpool equalised that they were going to get away with it, because I thought, just in general, Manchester City looked way better than Liverpool. Going forward, yes, you were talking about Mane's header, but that was it. And the goal he actually got was a gift from the football gods. But Manchester City, and particularly Sterling, I was actually a little surprised he didn't get the ball to Sterling a lot more down that left-hand side, because he absolutely roasted Alexander-Arnold, made him look like an absolute novice as a defender. But as I said, in general, the best team won, no question. And quite frankly, this is City's to throw away.
They were so good, weren't they, City, when they were good today, Frank?
They were very good. I mean, they started very well the game. And after Liverpool dominated the last 20 minutes of the game and could have maybe scored a goal with Mane. But overall, yeah, nothing much to say. Many mistakes, though, from fantastic players. Ruben Dias, who has been absolutely perfect for the 6 months that he has been playing for Manchester City, did his first mistake. And it can happen to anyone. Gundogan is on fire, but missed the penalty. Alexander-Arnold has to work very, very hard defensively. I mean, the first penalty is a take on Sterling, and on the first goal is again Sterling taking on Alexander Arnold. It's too easy to take him on. He has to work harder. And then after, of course, you have Alisson mistakes. But you know what is who is responsible for Alisson mistakes? Don't you think that Klopp is forcing, like any coaches who want to start, you know, clinical from the back, their goalkeepers to take so many risks? And it's what happened today. You have to be punished at some point. You know, sometimes we always say, you know, what are they doing? They're getting crazy. Why do they take so much risks? And today, they pay the price. They pay the price. And it's why they conceded those goals.
How do you explain what he did, not once but twice?
He's human, is about the only out I can offer Alisson here. But to Frank's point, yes, that's exactly what Jurgen Klopp wants. Well, he wants Liverpool to be playing out from the back, including Alisson. And everybody has that little pass that they're most comfortable with. And Alisson's is right-footed, little clip out to the left back. And City know that. Foden knows that. From the time Alisson picks the ball up and is under a little bit of pressure, you see Foden start to backtrack immediately. And if that ball isn't perfect, Foden is in the perfect position to pick it up. And that's exactly what happened, not once, but twice. He anticipates, he gets there, the ball isn't great, Foden picks it up, and now all of a sudden Liverpool are exposed. Now, on the one hand, for me, playing in my era, that's not something we did. We didn't play out to the back. Keepers weren't expected to make those passes out. Wing-backs weren't expecting the ball there. But Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp feels that that's where they have their strength, where they want to stretch teams, invite that pressure on and build out from the back. You live by it, sometimes you die by it. And Liverpool died by it today.
Shaq, I'm going to disagree slightly with you here, because it's one thing to play out of the back, right? It's another thing to try and be too clever and play a Hollywood ball. Listen, he could quite easily have just pinged that ball to the right-hand side of the halfway line, which they normally do. He was actually facing the right-hand side of the halfway line, and he's trying to hit a ball 40, 50 yards left. That's a Hollywood ball. That's a ball that a proper player should be hitting. Not the goalkeeper. And the goalkeeper's got to make the right decision of what pass he's trying to make, Shaq. So I'm not giving Klopp any blame for the first one at all. The second one, yeah, they're trying to play out and he just makes a mess here. But the first one, no, that's a bad decision by the goalkeeper.
Frank?
No, I don't agree with Stevie. I think they are completely forced to do that, to go that way. I remember Guardiola,
He's not facing that way, Frank.
He doesn't care. He says he knows that there is a partner on the left side and he knows that he has to reach him because the ball comes from the right and he has to go to the left. And they work on that during the training session and they know that they have to take those risks to please the coach. Guardiola said, I think it was about Ter Stegen, I don't care if he makes mistakes, I don't care if we concede goal, they have to do so. And I'm sure that Alisson doesn't want to take those risks. I'm sure sometimes he says, well, I should kick the ball, but the coach wants me to do that, so I'm going to take that risk. And if it doesn't work, I will be like a fool, but the coach should take responsibilities for that.
Frank, you must have had coaches when you made a mistake doing something. Must have said to you, Frank, that wasn't on, and you tried to do it. That's exactly what the situation was with the goalkeeper today on the first one. It wasn't on. That pass was not on for him to play it. And it's his decision. He has to make the decision on the field.
I agree with you, Stevie. If you have the free will and the choice of doing otherwise. But if you work week in, week out with the goalkeeper coach, and he says to you, when the ball comes from the right, you have to take the risk because I want you to be clinical. I don't want to lose the ball with a big kick for the opponents. You want to take the risk, and it becomes automatic for you to take that risk.
My old coach, Ronnie Moran, if I said that to him, he would say, you know what? If I asked you to jump off the bridge, would you do it? That's what he would reply to that.
Now, Stevie, we all do respect. We are old. So it's another football, and it's we play another football, and I agree with you. And I will never take that risk, for sure. And I will never jump out of the bridge.
Stevie, there has been so much made this season from within the club and, of course, from outside as well about the injuries that have hampered Liverpool's progress this campaign. Yet you take a look at that starting 11. There weren't that many players missing who have been so key to the success. Of course, Virgil van Dijk. Of course, Henderson is playing at the back.
You can't see that.
But surely,
and Fabinho as well.
Surely the quality that is on the pitch has got to do better than we saw in this game. They've got to create chances. You've still got Mane and Firmino and Salah up front.
I think the front three, 100%, have to take a lot of the weight of the problems that Liverpool have got right now. Because what's going on behind them is getting changed every single time they step on the field, pretty much. And so you're never going to be able to live up to what you previously did in the past two seasons if you're constantly doing that. But the front three, no question, the three of them are absolutely struggling big time. You talk about picking the wrong pass at the wrong time, and that's exactly what they've been doing for the last, 6 to 8 weeks. So I think absolutely you can give Liverpool a pass from the middle of the park to the back, but you can't not give a pass to the front three. The front three have been absolutely underwhelming.
Frank?
Dan, can you imagine that Manchester City losing Ruben Dias and Stones and playing with, Gundogan and Rodri at the back? Don't you think that the game of Manchester City will be different? I think Henderson and Fabinho, they do well at the back. They do what they can do. But in the middle of the park, they will be so helpful and much more than Thiago Alcantara and Jones, with all due respect for them, because they're talented player. But defensively, when they press the opponent, with the three at front, with Anderson and Fabinho, it's another story. And that you cannot avoid the problem, that the fact that Van Dijk, Matip and Gomez are not there, and they try to build something which is not stable, which is completely unbalanced for me comparing to the two last seasons.
So does Klopp get a pass overall then, Stevie?
Yes. Listen, if Liverpool were doing what they're doing with a full squad, then absolutely you could have a go at him and every single one of them, because they've set a standard for themselves. And part of our job is to keep them to that. And then when they drop down it, then they're open for criticism. But when you've got the problem that they've got, you can't be pointing the finger at anybody in particular. As I said, as a unit, the front three have been really poor. But you can't point the finger at Klopp. I mean, what's he supposed to do? He's sitting down every day he comes in trying to figure out what team he's going to put out. And he's got to decide whether he plays Henderson in the middle of the park or centre-back. Or do I play one of the young kids again who've been making mistakes? Or do I play the early kid? Or do I play the guy we've just bought? I mean, that's his thought process right now. It's not about, oh, how are we going to do this now? We're going to get the full-backs forward. And how are we going to get the midfielders in the penalty box? He's trying to figure out what team he's putting on the park before he even thinks about anything else.
What doesn't help his cause, though, is these pre-match comments about the 2 weeks. Because excuse time. Isn't it?
Absolutely, isn't it? I'm with Stevie here. I think Liverpool, especially if Liverpool finish top four, you have to give Klopp a pass. On the one hand, Liverpool have hardly had any injuries to deal with. They become European champions and then Premier League champions. And just by the law of averages, you figure that they would have to deal with some absences this season. Compile on that the pandemic and what it's meant with this compressed season, and it's made it all the worse for Liverpool. Klopp hasn't helped himself in what he's had to see. And for me, that is where the pressure is coming from, not necessarily where they currently sit in the table. And to your point, Dan, or to your question previously about Liverpool's, the names on the team sheet, if you just look at the names on the team sheet, yes, it's still an incredible team. But when you consider that Fabinho and Henderson, two midfielders, are playing as your centre-backs, that challenge by Fabinho, albeit the penalty was missed, is so typical of somebody playing out of position. Add to that you have young Jones and Thiago playing in midfield and not Fabinho and Henderson. And I made the point during the highlight that in the first Gundogan goal, despite the red shirts, nobody drops deep enough to pick up Gundogan so that for the follow-up. Had that been Fabinho or Henderson sitting in front of that back four, I think they're there. I think that they, at the very least, have put Gundogan under pressure, and it's not the tapping. That makes a whole lot of difference. The other thing to me is I think Thiago is brought into this Liverpool team to play against defences that are sitting in their own box. Thiago wants to be playing 10 yards outside the opponent's box, picking those passes. That's his strength. Not playing 5 or 10 yards outside his own box, tracking the runs of Foden and Gundogan.
We talked about...
Dan.
Go on, Stevie.
Dan. Do you know what? Klopp's missed a trick here. Because over the last couple of seasons, the football that Liverpool have played, the positive the attitude that he's had, the big smile on his face, laughing and being friendly, and the whole football world were delighted to just watch Liverpool play. It was a joy. All he had to do was keep his mouth closed and just say, you know what, we'll fight through this. Sometimes this happens. And everybody would have been with him. Instead of even his own supporters are like, oh, don't start with the nonsense again and the sour grapes and the complaining. He's absolutely missed a trick. He could have had the rest of the football world still eating out his hand by just accepting the way things are. Because regardless of what he said, changing.
I just want to talk briefly about Manchester City, Frank, because obviously they are big, big title favourites now. And this was a coming of age, you feel, once again, of Phil Foden. There was so much expectations, of course. Pep Guardiola talking him up over the last couple of the years. Very much the UK media getting excited about this young, hot Englishman coming through. He was excellent today, wasn't he?
It was absolutely excellent. He was absolutely perfect. He did everything that they had to do. It's working because not too many people maybe see that it works defensively as well. When he comes back and try to get the ball back and help his midfielders teammates and offensively, there is nothing much to say. You know, the way he delivers, the way he offers by some runs, and the way he finished today with that fantastic goal. there's nothing much to say. I mean, it's very good for England. I mean, the threat.
It's great, Frank.
With Sterling,
it's great.
With him.
We're going to win the World
Cup.
Yeah,
you're happy. You're happy. Yeah. Well, you can. Well, let's try to win the European Championship first, and we'll talk about the World Cup after, you know. But it's possible. Of course, it's possible. You know, everything is going well for England, and the new generation has many, many tools that we can surprise and not please the other countries.
But Steve, sure. We know what the UK media are like. They build people up and then just want them to fail in the end. And a lot of expectation on Phil Foden's shoulders, but he's living up to it, isn't he? Stevie? Oh, Stevie's gone.
Oh, sorry.
He doesn't want to say anything positive about England.
Yeah. They were unlucky yesterday in the rugby. Other than that, listen, the guy's got a magic wand for a left peg. Yeah. The guy's got a magic wand for a left peg. And he actually does things with ease. He makes things look very simple and very easy. And I'm not sure how much pace he's got, because he never looks as though he's actually in full stride. So, I mean, he's got everything. He sees a pass, he can play a pass, he can score a goal. He gets back. He got back a couple of times and defended as well. So, listen, the kid's got the game at his feet, and if he keeps his head screwed on tightly and properly, my goodness, England's got some player.
Stevie, of course, we talked about Liverpool's injuries. Liverpool, Manchester City doing this without Kun Aguero and without Kevin De Bruyne as well. And once again, We saw, despite that penalty miss, Ilkay Gundogan coming in and raising his level.
Right. And I don't want you to take this in a negative way, Dan. But anybody who thinks that titles... Anybody that thinks that a title can be won without a good defence is kidding themselves. Because that's been the difference in this team. Mm. The defence, during the period when City was struggling, when they had no Aguero and everybody else wasn't producing as far as the forward line, you know, whether it was Jesus... or even Foden or Mahrez or Sterling. You know, they were going through a tough time. But City were winning 1-0 and maybe scraping 2-0 with a 90th minute goal. And the reason we're doing that is because of the back line. And so, as I started by saying, anybody who thinks you can just go and blow away teams and score 4 and 5 goals every week and forget about defending, I think this City team shows you that of all the years... This one's been built on a solid back line.
Frank, Gundogan stepping up the way in which he has it surprised you?
No, because I've seen him playing, you know, when he was playing in Germany, and he was absolutely fantastic, and he's a tremendous player. But, you know, in collective football, you always have to add the work of the others, and I agree with Stevie with the back line, but also the fact that Rodri works hard also defensively, and maybe is the game for Gundogan, who, if he works defensively, will have to think mostly about attacking and being a help to the three at front, and he does very well. He knows where to put himself. He's always in the good spot. He has the feeling right now. He's on fire. He's simply on fire, and is a big, big plus for Guardiola, for sure.
Stevie, you mentioned it, didn't you, when you were just recapping the game. You mentioned Alexander-Arnold obviously being completely exposed today by Raheem Sterling. This is something that has concerned you for quite a while now.
Hmm. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure Klopp knows exactly what Alexander-Arnold is. If you think back to the Champions League final, you know, the last 20 minutes... He took Alexander out of that right back position and put him in right midfield, because he knew if he left them there, Spurs were going to go down that side and expose him. And he's actually done it over the last couple of years. He's done it a few times when they've had a narrow lead with 10 minutes to go. He's either taken Alexander Arnold off, or he's put him in the right hand side of midfield so that he's not playing full back. So I don't think this is anything new to Klopp. It's certainly not new to me. The fact is because he has been so fantastic going forward, and in the system that they play, you couldn't not play him. And he'll continue to play. But listen, the one thing they will have to do is figure a way out of how they can stop teams getting at him. And I guess that is get Henderson and Fabinho back in the middle of the park. That would start off. That would start it all off.
Frank, is the title over?
For Liverpool, yes, yes. But for everybody else, you know, I think City, and I said it last week, I think they're gonna end up, you know, in front with at least 10 points ahead. I don't see Manchester United catching them up. They have one game in hand, 5 points ahead, yeah. Maybe eight. It's over. Yeah, it's over. They're so accurate, so consistent. I don't see anybody catching them up.
How would it play out, Shaq? An injury to Diaz or Stones? Is that kind of where we're at?
The only way I see anybody as coming back into this discussion is if, yes, Manchester City has a couple more injuries in defensive positions to add to the two that they already have. And listen, on the one hand, yes, Pep Guardiola has spent more money than anybody else in the Premier League, but there's not another club in this league that you can say, I'll take one or two players out and see how you fare. If you offer that to anybody else, whether it's Spurs and Harry Kane, Manchester United and Bruno Fernandes, all things being even, if you said to City at the start of the season, you'd have to cope without two players for long spells, you'd probably pick De Bruyne and Aguero. Yet here we are talking about a team running away the league. There's nobody else that can afford that, given the strength of City's squad. And again, in this most odd of seasons, I think City again proving that they are better equipped than anybody else to cope with whatever the unknown is between now and the end of the season.
And we get to a stage where I ask Stevie genuinely, are Liverpool going to finish top four?
Well, I guess if you had asked me that, but what, 4 weeks ago, I would have said, don't be so stupid. Mm. The fact is that it's beginning to look like they could struggle. You know, you have real problems when you lose at home, number one. But if you're a Liverpool side that have gone, what, I think it was 80 odd games at home without losing, and then you've lost three within 3 weeks, then there's a real problem. And so, unless you figure that problem out quickly, and I guess I say a problem, it's just a defensive problem, to be honest, because I think when you're always looking over your shoulder what's going on behind you, then it makes it harder to go forward. So unless something can be done defensively, unless something can be done as far as the front three is concerned to try and get some form between two of the three, or listen, even one of the three right now, then it is a real possibility that they could miss out.
He would certainly argue that they're looking over their shoulders very much at Chelsea at the moment, moved within 1 point of Liverpool after a 2-1 victory against Sheffield United. Stevie, how would you sum this game up?
It was particularly average, I've got to admit. Neither side were particularly fluent, neither side were particularly brilliant when it came to creating much. And so Chelsea just got the job done, and you know, but three wins out of four for Tuchel, and people will say, well, he's made an impact. Truth is, he's just got the job done. You know, I think we're still no closer to figuring out what Chelsea's best team is. He's still making changes, particularly with the forward line. But while he's tinkering, if they can keep winning, then obviously the signs are good for Chelsea. But yet again, I wasn't impressed by the way they played. But you know what? They won.
Yeah, Frank, I suppose people who still support Lampard would come out and say, yeah, but look, who's got results against? Wolves, Burnley, a rubbishy Spurs and Sheffield United. Lampard could have done all of this.
Yeah, maybe, but remember that lately Manchester United lost against Sheffield. So you have to do the job, and let's say it's a good warm-up before a series of big, big games for Tuchel. As TV said, and I agree, completely agree, it wasn't a good game, not convincing performance, but at the end of the day, they got the 3 points. That's the most important thing, you know. We would have thought that Chelsea would be fifth after that day, you know, after an awful month, just before the new year and just the beginning of the new year. So let's say that so far, Tuchel is doing the job. The players are doing average, but they're getting every time the 3 points, or most of the time, so it's good enough.
What was interesting, Shaq, we saw the post-match interview, didn't we, Tuchel, and we both spoke about how well he comes across.
Yeah, and how calming his tone is, especially addressing any issues that Chelsea may have. He spoke about Werner and his misfiring, but he highlighted the contributions that he continues to make despite his not scoring. And if you're sitting in the dressing room, and given how up and down this season was under Frank Lampard, that's exactly the kind of tone you want to hear your manager speak about. You know what you're going to... Well, you think you know what you're getting under Tuchel as far as Chelsea goes. They're going to play a possession-based game, even if they're still trying to figure out who his best 11 is, and more to the point, who's strike forces. But you see the direction. Chelsea had problems, which is why Frank Lampard lost his job. Now Tuchel comes in, and at least you see how he's trying to address some of those issues. Easy start. All you can do is play the games that you're given, helped by the fact that Liverpool continue to stumble, Manchester United have stumbled themselves, and that's brought you right back into a conversation. Mm-hmm. You do your job, you're getting favours from others, and all of a sudden it's looking good. But Tuchel will continue to focus on their job, and I think he's doing a wonderful job of it.
Meanwhile, Sunday started with Spurs with a 2-0 victory over West Brom. Harry Kane, a surprise inclusion in the starting 11. Is it as simple as saying, Stevie, when Harry Kane plays, Spurs win?
Yes. It's that simple. I mean, he just makes it completely and utterly... You know, Spurs, in the last, four or five games since he's been out, they haven't even created a chance. All of a sudden, because this guy's playing, he's creating chances himself by finding space, and then people can find him with the ball. He had a couple of chances in the first half that I would suggest, had he been 100%, he would normally at least hit the target. But then, of course, the second half finds himself a bit of space, which is not easy against West Brom, by the way, because it's generally filled with... The penalty box is generally full of West Bromwich Albion players. And he puts them ahead, and then the game's done. And oh, no surprise, by the way. Son scores when Kane's on the field.
Yep.
And guess who's involved? Kane. Nice little chest to Lucas, who runs 50 yards and lays it off. So all of a sudden... It's Kane and Son once again, and Spurs seem to be kind of back to normal for the moment anyway.
Well, it's nice when you can play West Brom as well. That certainly helps thing. And you think against an inferior opposition like that, Stevie, maybe you could bring on Gareth Bale with 20 minutes to go to give him a run out. But yet again, for the second successive game, no sign of Gareth Bale. This is done, isn't it? This has been a horrible return.
I've got more chance of getting a game there, I suppose, than Gareth Bale. Seriously. I mean, the camera panned on him as well. And I don't know where he was, but he wasn't watching the game. His eyes were in the clouds. He must have been thinking of the first tee somewhere in Spain, I'm assuming, because that's probably where he's going to be going shortly, because he needs to get himself out of Spurs, because he ain't getting a game.
Meanwhile, for West Brom, they're done, aren't they? It does look like these three who are sitting in the relegation zone will be playing their trade in the Championship next season, barring an extraordinary run. Fulham, West Brom and Sheffield United in serious, serious trouble.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What a game in La Liga on Sunday. Real Betis taking on Barcelona. Barca coming from behind to win by 3-2 to remain second in the table. Let's welcome in, shall we, Ali Moreno to the show. Ali, what a week of comebacks for Barcelona.
Yes, indeed. I guess one way to look at it is, well, you have to come back because you're not so great defensively, because you have some flaws through the midfield, because you have some flaws in 1v1 defending, because the counterattack is still an issue whenever teams get on space and attack you the way that Real Betis did today. And they did create chances and they did go up. However, the other way to look at it is, similarly to the conversation we had about Real Madrid, is that today Barcelona showed a little bit of character, a little bit of strength, a little bit of togetherness, and fight and say, you know what, we're not going to lose this game. However, it also helps to have Lionel Messi coming off the bench. And if you're Ronald Koeman,
you couldn't wait.
I'm just saying, you couldn't wait to say, Leo, Leo, get on the field. And you know who else couldn't wait? Jordi Alba. And you know who else couldn't wait? Ousmane Dembele and Antoine Griezmann. Because those guys' movements became a lot better and a lot more effective and a lot more efficient when Lionel Messi's on the field. Because he attracts all this attention. And then all the runs that Jordi Alba was making in the first half that were not being rewarded by a ball being played over the top were now being rewarded because Lionel Messi was playing those balls. Because Ousmane Dembele is now in 1v1 situations with time and space where he can get a defender because Lionel Messi is attracting a lot of attention. Antoine Griezmann can play in a central role inside the 18-yard box even though he, whiffed and a miss on the, or swing and a miss in that own goal by Victor Ruiz. But he was there, which we haven't seen all that often. Frankie de Jong, who came off the bench because of the substitution by Ronald Araujo and he has to play as a center back, when he steps into the midfield, he also becomes a difference maker. Lionel Messi steps on the field, not only do you get that feeling from Barcelona and saying, hey, great, we got Leo on the field, yay! But you also get a reaction from Real Betis and say, oh no, mommy, this guy's on the field. 2 minutes in, he's scoring a goal, and of course he made a difference towards the end as well.
Ali Moreno, as always, thank you very much for Barcelona. Attention turns to the Copa del Rey this week, taking on Sevilla in the semi-final. These played over two legs. The other one, Athletic Bilbao against Levante on Thursday.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
AC Milan then back to the top of the table with a 4-0 victory. 2 points clear of Inter, 7 of Juventus. The defending champions, though, of course, do have a game in hand. But according to the bookies, AC Milan are still third favourites. Well, let's welcome in, shall we, Matteo Bonetti and Gab Marcotti. Matteo, I feel like every week we talk about a Milan win and you say, yep, they're doing great, but eventually they're going to fade off and be overtaken by Inter and Juve. Not yet, though.
No, not yet, but the Europa League is coming.
No,
it isn't
no
coming
cares about
for
that.
Inter
fine.
As they finish in fourth place. But listen, that's the fact of the matter is that Inter have no European competitions for Antonio Conte to complain about. They have a better squad. They have more depth. And I think that a lot of people are just waiting to see, is Milan going to drop back down to earth? It feels like, okay, the two losses, one against Juventus and against Atalanta. Ah, Milan is back to just being at their level, just like Lazio were last season post-lockdown when they were within a point of Juventus behind them in the Scudetto race, and then they fell off the planet, and they were just lucky to finish in the top four. It hasn't happened yet, and the good news for Milan is Hakan Çalhanoğlu, one of your favorite names to pronounce, Dan, is coming back. He came in the second half, and he's been one of Milan's most important players. Zlatan Ibrahimovic is healthy for the time being. I wouldn't be shocked if Milan won it, but I'm still going to go with Inter as the favorite. I'm sorry.
Zlatan at a 39-year-old best, Gab.
Yeah, he's we feels like we talk about him every week when he plays like this. We talk about him for the right reasons. The quality hasn't gone away. The experience is still there. He's in tremendous physical condition. And he's found the right balance between, I think, being a leader and trying to be everything and being a prima donna. I think he also knows that the clock is ticking. So he's generally been on his best behavior. He's not just a finisher. He's also, as we've seen, he does a great job at being a provider as well, bringing teammates into play. And he's found a way of playing that I think, you know, helps mask inevitably his deficiencies at 39 years of age and maximizes his strengths.
Let's focus on Juventus then after that 2-0 victory over Roma. Cristiano Ronaldo, key once again, Matteo. A lovely opening goal.
Yeah, it was a brilliant goal, and it went with something that Pirlo said after the match, that he wanted to play Ronaldo in this game closer to the edge of the box, maybe just behind the striker. And he went on to say just how adaptable Ronaldo has been. We know that in this stage of his career, he's not going to track back, but you don't want to expend his energy in that. But he has been versatile. He's been playing down the middle as a number nine. He's been playing as a left winger. And in this game, he was sort of hovering in that central area behind the striker, Alvaro Morata. And that's exactly where the goal happened. It was a traditional Ronaldo goal that we've seen so many times. Doesn't matter if it's right boot or left boot, which is supposedly his weaker left foot. And he just smashes into the bottom corner. No chance for the goalkeeper. It's a vintage Ronaldo performance. Really brilliant stuff.
Gab, he scored 300 goals since he turned 30. That's bonkers.
Yeah, that guy's pretty good, isn't he? I don't know what else to say. I mean, you know, he scored 300 goals since he scored 30, just turned 36. Will he be at 500 by the time he's in his 30s, by the time he turns 40? Will it be more than that? I don't know. I mean, obviously, he's been tremendous. And I think what's really been surprising, he goes through a patch of a couple games where he doesn't play well, and yet he still maintains all that confidence, all that self-assuredness, knowing that he's going to turn it around. And certainly he does with just an outstanding goal. To really open the door for a Juve side who, personally, I don't think Juventus as a team played anywhere near as well as they've played in recent games.
No, that's interesting, though, Gab, isn't it? When you look at their title credentials and once again going on to win it, it's the old cliche, isn't it? You don't play at your best, but you still get the win. That was kind of epitomised yesterday. Why weren't they at their best yesterday?
So I think partly because Roma are a really, really good team. Partly because I think when you have some of the veterans in there, and I'm thinking specifically of Chiellini, everybody praising Chiellini to high heaven, and he did have a very good game. But if you're going to have Chiellini in there, inevitably the way you defend is going to be a little bit different. There's still a ton of people in the Juve sphere who think that, you know, Allegri's Juve was the paragon of everything, and this idea that, you know, score a goal because you've got outstanding players and then just, you know, defend and don't give up shots and that's how you win games. That's not what Juve want to do as a club. It's not what Pirlo wants to do. But I think, give him credit, that's what they did in this game. He obviously felt that it was the right thing to do to get the 3 points home and he was vindicated by it. What I would say is you're not necessarily always going to have Cristiano creating a goal out of nothing through his sheer brilliance to give you that platform where then you take the lead and then you score a second with an own goal. But, you know, in the immediate, it would have been far more hurtful if they dropped points here. And I think Pirlo got that. So he has that. He has a little bit of that flexibility. I don't think he wants to play too many more games, like the one we saw against Roma. He wants to go out and dominate the opposition.
We heard an audible sigh there. Was that to do what Gab was saying or working from home, Matteo?
A little bit of both. No, but with Giorgio Chiellini in the play style, I want to touch upon this really interesting because it was actually a year ago, Gab, and you'll probably remember this interview where Giorgio Chiellini came out in the media and he said that under Maurizio Sarri, he wants us to basically throw away everything that we learned the last 9 years. This Juventus side had a really beaten down identity, which was if you lose possession of the ball, everyone tracks back, you get everyone behind the ball, and you defend and you hold on to that lead. And now all of a sudden, Juventus want these managers that play aesthetically pleasing football. They don't want to just win ugly anymore. Oh. But it's not that easy of a change. Chiellini said, you can't just flip a switch and teach us all of a sudden to keep pressuring after we lose the ball and become this high-flying team. We're just not built that way, and that's why it was always awkward. And even now, we're seeing a little bit more of the pragmatism. You're not seeing the craziness from Sarri, and I feel like Pirlo's reached a little bit of a middle ground now between what we saw from Conte and Allegri and now what he's trying to get out of this team.
Gab, you agree?
No, I just bristle. There's a school of thought that says, that describes attacking football where you dominate the opposition, where you try to, doesn't mean you don't defend. It means that if you lose the ball, you try to win it high up the pitch and you do it with intensity and aggression. They say, oh, that's aesthetically pleasing football. That's pretty football. No, we don't do that. We're all about winning. Well, guess what? Teams that win generally play that way. Juventus have been the exception for a long time, and they realize, and that's why they changed. Look, Chiellini's absolutely 100% correct when he talks about how you can't just flip a switch and, you know, change 10 years of playing football in a certain way. And that's why all the time when I said Juventus were in transition and the club are okay with being in transition and you mercilessly mock me, Dan, you know, that's what they were. They were in transition. They're planning for a future where their center backs are De Ligt and Demiral and maybe somebody else who are comfortable doing that. That's what they're transitioning towards. I think Chiellini understands that, but it's not about being pretty and being aesthetically pleasing. It's about going out there and creating more chances than the opposition does and conceding fewer chances and being aggressive and progressive that way. And because you think that this is what gives you the best chance of winning big things like the Champions League and all these other trophies you even want to win. So they've gone in this direction, and I don't think they're going back anytime soon, whether it's Pirlo or another manager.
Meanwhile, let's talk about Inter, shall we? Finally, Matteo, you're going to say something positive about Barella?
I've been saying everything positive about this kid. He's been absolutely incredible, Dan. This is a guy that joined Inter where he was coming from a situation at Cagliari where he was playing everywhere. He started playing earlier in his career behind the striker. Then he learns that he can play in front of the defense. And I feel like Antonio Conte has bottled Nicolò Barella and turned him really into maybe the most important Italian young player. And that's something I never thought I would be saying, but he does absolutely everything. He's aggressive. He runs into challenges. He has maybe the best work rate on the team. He can get forward, play a pass, take a shot on goal. I mean, this is the Italians call it like a tuttocampista, someone who can do everything in the midfield, and he really does personify this. He's like the perfect Antonio Conte type player, and with all the chaos that's going on behind the scenes at Inter with the finances and Suning, you haven't really seen that on the pitch because it was another very calm win, and Nicolò Barella has had a huge footprint on the success this season.
Matteo's saying he's the best Italian player ever, Gab. You agree?
Maybe not ever, not just yet, but I mean, I think Matteo makes a great point about his personality on the pitch and the way he expresses himself. And I was talking to somebody who's involved with the Italian national team, and they made the point that so many talented young Italian players, they tend to play within themselves. They tend to be scared of making mistakes. They may be super disciplined. And that's part of the reason why young players in Italy in recent years have developed a little bit later. With Barella, and I have to say Marco Verratti as well, that's not the case. And they suggested that possibly it was because they didn't come through the ranks at traditional big clubs. Verratti was at Pescara. And of course, Barella came through the ranks at Cagliari. So he didn't have this situation where, you know, the first team seems so far away. And he knew, and above all, you know, he had coaches who told him, no, you know, be disciplined, play within yourself, don't follow your instincts. And I think that's why he's such a free-flowing, talented player compared to other guys who I can think of who, you know, maybe came through the ranks at Inter or at Juve or at other clubs who tend to be a little more cautious and play a little more within themselves.
Well, just a reminder, we're at the semi-final stages of the Coppa Italia. Both of them poised beautifully after the first leg on Tuesday as Juventus against Inter Juve with that 2-1 lead. Meanwhile, goalless, of course, in the first leg between Atalanta and Napoli. There will be goals on Wednesday.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The big game in France today saw PSG beat Marseille by 2-0. Kylian Mbappe and Mauro Icardi getting the strikes for the visitors. It will be a feisty game late on. Payet sent off for a terrible challenge on Verratti. As Frank Leboeuf is back with us. Once again, Frank, not a particularly pretty game between these two sides.
Well, it's much better than the first leg, I would say. And we talked about a little bit about football when we saw something pretty good from both teams. But it's true that the two last pictures that you showed maybe say otherwise. But, you know, we had a decent first half and we saw a decent Marseille comparing of last week. We saw average Paris, I would say, but we can make differences because of the talent of their players. And if Messi seems to be back to his best, you know, before the Champions League first leg against Paris Saint-Germain, Mbappe is back also to his best, and he's been shown, and Shaka mentioned that, what he knows the best is to run fast and to make the difference. And he did on that first goal, and he did that against Nîmes as well. He's back to his best, so maybe he's good, but Paris Saint-Germain didn't impress me before that big two games against Barcelona.
No Di Maria maybe for that game against Barcelona. How a bigger blow is that, Frank?
Well, it depends on what Pochettino wants to do with the game, because Neymar is back, you know, whether he wants to put Icardi at front, who scored a goal alongside Mbappe and Neymar. Therefore, maybe you wouldn't have seen Di Maria. But we know how Di Maria can be precious in giving fantastic balls to the others. So, yeah, it's a bad news, but it is what it is, and they would have to cope with that situation. But they have talented. There is another question mark. Verratti is important in the middle of the park. Hopefully, it's just a kick and a bad kick, but it's just a kick on his hip. He's going to be hopefully back for the first leg against Barcelona.
Thank you very much, Frank. Well, despite that win, PSG remained third in the table. Lyon with that victory on Saturday and Lille with that 2-0 win on Sunday, meaning that it is Lille who remain top of the standings. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Stay tuned though. Shaka will stay with me. Frank Leboeuf back with us as well to answer your tweets on Extra Time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Shaka Hislop with us here in these studios. Frank Leboeuf joins us as well. Shaka, as a goalkeeper, can you explain what happened with Alisson today and if you've had any moments like that before? Well, your career was defined by that.
Well, not moments like that, because I wasn't passing the ball out to anybody. I was launching it. Listen, that's the difference between the game today and the game when we played, you know. Keepers weren't expected to be passing the ball out the back. Defenders didn't expect their goalkeepers to be giving them the ball in that kind of position. Listen, as I said during the show, you just put that down to human error by one of the best in the game today. You have to take that on the chin, I guess. I mean, that's how Klopp asked them to play. You get punished for it sometimes.
Shaka, still on Alisson. Do you buy Klopp's reasoning that Alisson's cold feet were the cause of his poor performance? Were you ever subjected to the problem in your playing days?
Of cold feet?
Yes.
But no. Not particularly.
You played in Newcastle, Shaq. Very cold.
Newcastle's a lovely place to play your football, Daniel.
Why are you being weird?
I'm not being weird. I just don't know where you're going with this line of questions. I just don't know.
Cold feet, does it affect you playing?
Literally cold feet? Literal cold feet?
Yes, Alison.
I've never played. I don't recall playing and feeling my feet frozen.
Right.
Once you get into the game, that's not an issue.
No.
That's not an issue. What are the weird questions you have for me?
That's it. I didn't make up these questions, did I?
No, I'm just saying, sometimes you set your face up.
Set my face up.
There's something going on. I'm trying to figure it out.
It's just the way my face is made. If Kevin De Bruyne and Kun Aguero, Frank, come back, who do you think will be dropped from the current starting 11 of Manchester City?
Ooh, that's a tough question. Seeing that Foden is doing great right now, maybe Bernardo Silva could be out.
Yeah.
And the other? I don't know. That would be a rotation system. I would say, I don't know, it's very harsh to say a name and... And the truth of today is not the truth of tomorrow, so hard to say. I don't see Rodri leaving. I don't see Gundogan leaving the park. We have to find somebody else in the middle. And maybe Mahrez. Mahrez didn't have a good game today. So if it's the game tomorrow, I would say Mahrez and Silva, maybe.
Should Edison start taking penalties for City?
Absolutely, yes. We were having this discussion, Dan. Goalkeepers generally are the best kickers of the ball in the park.
So you used to take penalties at college?
I did. I took a few penalties while I was at Howard University. Absolutely right, Dan.
100% conversion rate?
99.9%.
So you took 999 penalties and missed one? You took 1,000 penalties and missed one.
I missed one, yeah.
Out of how many?
Not quite as many as you suggest.
Haven't you told me this story before? Haven't you only ever taken one penalty and it was in a shootout and you missed it?
No, I took a penalty in a shootout and I scored.
Right.
That's when Howard went to the NCAA final, 1988.
Did you win the final?
No, we lost to Indiana, in Indiana.
Right.
I'm sure we've had this discussion.
Dr.
Joe Matrick was the referee. We've had this discussion.
Oh, Dr. Joe.
Gave a penalty to Indiana. I'm still looking for Dr. Joe. What were we talking about? Oh, my penalties.
Yeah, penalties, right.
I took a couple others, and then I missed one playing in Alabama or something.
So your conversion rate was 75%?
Roughly, thereabouts.
Frank, Gundogan has taken big penalties in the past. Why did he look so weird over this one?
I didn't like the way he was standing before the penalty and the short run that he makes. You know, maybe, I don't know, and I think there is a right spot, it's on the floor. I think it's very awkward to try to find the top corner, and don't forget that the ends of the goalkeepers are around there, you know. So to go on the floor for the goalkeeper is harder, and Shaka can confirm that. So a strong shot on the floor, it's almost like half a yard close to the post. It's almost impossible for the goalkeeper to catch it. So I don't know why some players, and good again today, try to make it more difficult than it really is. And at least you have to shoot on target. You have to. I never missed a penalty because I shot outside the target. I missed 3 or 4 penalties out of 50 because goalkeeper made a good save. But not because I missed it. It's because they made a good save. I have nothing to regret. And I never miss the target.
The thing is, generally, and you hear good penalty takers tell you this, if you hit the top half of the goal, almost anywhere, other than straight at the keeper, you have a chance of scoring. But as Frank would tell you, it's so much easier to overcook that if you are going high than if you just go low. If, you know, it's... As a good taker, it's harder to mess up. As Frank's saying, you have to miss the target. And now for me, and despite all these crazy run-ups and different angles that people come at and the hop, skip and a jump that you see now, For me, the most efficient and the most difficult penalty takers to read are the ones who just run up to the ball naturally.
Right.
And the good ones are able to change which side they're going to. They look at the goalkeeper. If you move early, they just put it the other side. If you don't, they're so good at it that it's in the back of your head. Even if you choose the right side, it's in. And that's the balancing act for a keeper, how early you go. But I've never been convinced, or certainly over the longer period, about, you know, these weird run-ups at different angles and a one step that you used to see a few years ago. And as you see with Jorginho and Bruno Fernandes, despite their own records, this hop, skip and a jump, there are better ways to take a penalty.
Have you ever seen an own goal?
Dan, I'm sorry.
Don't apologise.
I'm sorry. I have a question for Shaka.
What are you apologising for?
Sorry, because... No, it's because Shaka said he missed a penalty once. I want to know if the goalkeeper caught the ball and there was a counter-attack and if he had to sprint back.
Oh.
Because I know he was very fast.
Oh.
Was he fast enough to get the ball back?
I was noted for my speed over the ground, as you know, Dan. But no, I missed the target. Now, that's the thing. When I was a goalkeeper, I had to go... My miss was... It had to be wide. It had to be out of play. Otherwise...
Yeah.
The counter-attack is on.
So how bad were the rest of the team at kicking the ball if you had to come up?
What are you trying to say? I was just very good at it.
That's very mean, Dan.
I know, but it's Shaka, Frank. You know.
I was very good at taking penalties.
We've already established you missed one in four.
I would have scored the next 996. I was confident I was going to score the next 996, that's all.
Have you ever seen an own goal as funny as the Rudiger one, Shaka, during your play?
Absolutely! Yes. There's been tons better than that.
Yeah.
There's been tons. Frank, were you at Chelsea? I remember Frank Sinclair, good friend of mine, Frank Sinclair, scored what might have been direct from a kickoff. And ball just comes back. And he doesn't look to see where the goalie is, just kicks it back, it's in the net.
Wow.
I mean, that Rudiger one is blah.
That is a good one. That is good. Frank?
I never seen, when I was playing, and I don't understand Rudiger, you know, the basics of giving a ball to the goalkeeper, and Shaka will confirm, you always put the ball back outside of the net.
Yep.
Because in case something like that happens, at least the ball goes to a corner. That's what you have to know as a young player when you start playing at 10 years old. Rudiger made a huge, huge mistake.
And the other thing too is, you don't pass the ball straight. The keepers want the ball at an angle so you can come around and kick it. If the ball is just running straight at you, all you can do is kick the ball straight. It's so basic in this era for me.
The offside claim was good.
That was good. he started calling. That's the only thing he didn't do. Call for VAR.
Dan, we didn't talk about the penalty for Werner because I don't know what the rules and the law says about that, because Werner lost the ball. There's no way that he can catch the ball. So there is a foul from the ref, the goalkeeper. But in case you lose the ball and you don't get the ball back, is it a penalty?
Yeah, of course, it's still a foul, isn't it? You don't have to have the ball. You don't have to have control of the ball. If you get fouled, you're fouled.
Yeah, but did he make the mistake? Did he make the foul on purpose? Do you think the goalkeeper? I'm not sure about that.
Well, who makes a foul on purpose? What difference does that make?
Well, Payet made the foul on Verratti on purpose, you know, against Paris.
That's completely
tonight,
different.
That's for sure.
Kicking someone in the head. Frank, you and your anti-Chelsea ways. What do you think has gone wrong? What do you think has gone wrong with Kante? He never fell in favour with Lampard. Now he's only coming off the bench under Tuchel. Has he peaked, Frank?
Well, I think they're more cautious about him than making a decision about whether he's going to play or not. He was injured. He's a terrific player, and I think he's going to play soon because I don't think Jorginho and Kovacic will play all the game left, you know, until the end of the season. I really think for Tuchel that the first choice in the middle of the park is still Kante. But Kante has to be back to his best, which is maybe a problem right now because he got injured a lot and maybe lost a little bit of his confidence. But when he's going to be back to his best, I don't see why he won't play. And Tuchel, remember, Tuchel wanted him, I think, in Paris. So I don't think he changed his mind about him.
Final question is to you, Shaka. After watching Shaka highlights, Short, my question is, why did Shaka look like...
It doesn't say anything about Short.
It doesn't. After watching Shaka's Short highlight reel, my question is, why did Shaka look like he couldn't be bothered after blocking a shot? He often looked like he conceded a goal even after saving one.
I had a classic look for when I conceded a goal. I'd sit on the floor, arms around my knees. You could tell when I conceded.
Right.
Same look every single
time. Well, the
ball
was in the back of the net as well.
The other thing is, keepers are only judged by the next mistake.
Right.
So even when you make a save, you do something, that's quickly forgotten if you make a mistake. Just get me to the end of the game and then I'll celebrate.
But a classic goalkeeper move, isn't it? Make a brilliant save and then shout at all the defenders for letting the opponent shoot.
Yeah, I never did that.
You were never one of those?
I wasn't one of those.
And you wouldn't celebrate?
Nah. Never did that either.
You didn't save any penalties, did you, sir?
I saved many a penalty. 99.9%.
Yeah. For someone who went to NASA, that's a little off. Frank, just talk, like, did you have a like premeditated goal celebration at all?
No, never. It wasn't something we did once a good celebration for Chelsea. And it was the front page for the New Year's Eve for all the fans, with Di Matteo scoring a goal the last minute against Middlesbrough, the first year I was at Chelsea. But it wasn't premeditated. It was just, he was on the floor and we all went next to him with Denis Suárez, Jody Morris, Dan Petrescu and Ella Jensen. But it stayed for the forever, but it wasn't premeditated. No, we weren't. It wasn't our era. We didn't care about. We didn't know what to do after scoring a goal, you know. And it wasn't like something special. We were just doing our job, I guess.
One last thing. I know we want to go, but just Frank Zinchenko being dragged along the ground by Ruben Dias in the first half when he's on the bottom of the wall, like some sort of draft excluder. You've got to be like. It's just quite emasculating, isn't it? To be in that position, lying down there. It's got to be the weakest out of the whole locker room. You don't want to be that guy, surely.
No, of course not. But I think it's a very good idea because a wall is normally a wall and it doesn't move.
Yeah, but Frank, you wouldn't be the one lying down, would you?
Of course not.
No.
I would have put Gianfranco Zola or Denis Suárez, but I would have never gone on the floor.
Imagine telling Denis Suárez that he's got to lie down there.
Oh, my God. I know what he would say to me.
Yeah, he wouldn't cover even half the wall either, to be fair. Okay, that is it. Thank you very much. We've learned a lot about Shaka's penalty-taking prowess and the lies that have come out of it all. And we will be back tomorrow. What's happening tomorrow, Shaka? Are you here?
No, I'm not. I'm off.
Ah, yeah, that's exciting. We will be back then tomorrow to reflect more, I suppose, on what happened this weekend across the board.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.